a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters here in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Shavanan Burke. Coming up on the program. Healthy indicator. China's inflation shows signs of cooling as modest consumer price index growth and declining producer price index signal economic stabilization. Bilateral milestone. China and Germany commemorate 40 years of financial partnership with a dialogue forum held in Beijing, highlighting strong bilateral economic ties and collaborative efforts. Inflation challenge. U.S. faces continued challenges as inflation rises for the third consecutive month, putting pressure on efforts to control rising prices and maintain economic stability. China's Consumer Price Index, or CPI, the main gauge of inflation, showed a slower growth trajectory, primarily driven by reduced prices in food and travel services. Official data indicates a modest 0.1% year-on-year increase in CPI. The increase was 0.8 percentage points lower than the previous month. Meanwhile, the growth of China's Producer Price Index, or PPI, which measures costs for food at the factory gate, also slowed with a 2.8% decline compared to the previous year. This downturn is attributed to the resumption of industrial activity, resulting in an ample supply of industrial goods and subsequent downward pressure on production prices. Now, for more discussions on the latest economic data from China, let's bring in Xia Le, Asia Chief Economist at BBVA. Xia Le, good to see you. So what do China's latest inflation numbers indicate about China's economic health?
Yes, now if you look at this CPI and PPI indicators, we can have the conclusion that the Chinese economy is recovering, but this recovery is not that balanced. So to be specific, if you look at these CPI ones, we can see that these food and the other items, they show a bigger drop. But for the service sector prices, I think they still hold well. So that looks like this service sector is recovering. That's good news. But at the same time, if you look at this price of manufacturing goods, in particularly like cars, like these smartphones, and even the furniture, home appliance, their price is not that good. I take this first quarter as a whole, we can see the price level of this CPI almost flat with the first quarter of 2023. So it shows that now our manufacturing sector is very good. They produce a lot of the cheap goods, okay. Our consumer can benefit from that one. At the same time, the service sectors, they are expanding because people have more demand. But overall, we haven't got rid of this kind of concern of disinflation, or sometimes even people worry about maybe we could get into this deflation. That will be a big risk to our economy.
Yeah, exactly. And how do you think the recent slowdown in this China's CPI growth impact future economic policies?
Definitely, I think these CPI figures, they will draw attention of the policymakers. In future, our policymakers, they will consider have more demand stimulate measures to boost our economy. So now it seems that to boost our domestic demand and boost the entire economy, they are the two sides of the same coin. So if we do the first thing good, and then we can have a very good economy. But to be specific, if you look at the policy tools controlled by the policymakers, I think they have a lot of options. They can do more monetary easing through this interest cut, through this reserve requirement cut. I think they have enough room there. But of course, now if you look at the international environment, the U.S., they still keep this high interest rate. This situation could last longer, so that could, to some degree, constrain our policymakers' actions on monetary side. But we still have these fiscal tools. And on this fiscal side, I always support the idea that maybe we should allocate more resource directly to the household sectors. Maybe we can have more direct subsidy through this kind of coupon, or even directly we distribute some money to this household sector through this digital currency, because we have the most advanced digital currency in the world, right? So through this kind of the channels, our whole sectors, they can boost their income and they can have more consumption in future. Last one, I think now we have still have this housing sector uncertainties. So on the policymaker side, if they can have this policy to stabilize people's expectation, maybe it's not that easy to stabilize this housing sector overnight, but at least you can stabilize people's expectation. That will help our consumers to spend more money.
Yeah, speaking of the housing sector, which is, you know, a lot of people's concern right now, what's your expectation for China's property sector?
Yes, I think now because our Chinese property sector, they account quite a big share of the Chinese household wealth. So if this property sector, they still have this problem, people worry about they cannot get their housing delivery because they already pay their money, but due to the problem of some developers, they cannot get a home unit as expected. I think that they must save more because this is, we can call it precautionary saving. At the same time, if we look at other homes, they cannot get their housing in time, maybe people, they don't want to buy. So that could affect a related sector, not only for the one related to housing, but also related to, for example, home appliance, right? Yeah. For example, furniture, okay? If you cannot sell enough home unit, how can you expect people buy more home appliance from them? I think that's a very big concern for many people, for many families. I think if the policymakers, they can have a very effective measure to show people, okay, don't worry about this one, you will get your home maybe a few months later, okay? You cannot get that in time, but eventually you get that one. At the same time, if you can offer more discount to this kind of household sectors, maybe they can buy more or homes. So in that case, I think that will help to people to consume more.
So do you think China has more policy tools in hand to stimulate the property sector as well as consumption and also offset this deflationary pressure that we have right now?
Yes, I think China, they have ample room and they have enough policy tool to do that one. Of course, there's some long-term ones, there's some short-term ones. As I said, for the short-term one, monetary policy, fiscal policy, and under every class, you have a different choice, right? Reserve requirement cut, interest rate cut, directly subsidize a household sector, or you offer more coupons, or you cut tax, okay, for household. You have enough policy tools, and in particular, I think that it's good for Chinese authorities that they start to do more reform measures, to do more opening measures to the entire economy. I think that will reconfigure the entire economy. I think if you want to people to consume more, you must boost their income through different ways.
Yeah.
I think the long-term, the retirement system reform, retirement system improvement, that will make people have more certain future, that will stimulate people to consume more now. At the same time, I think the Chinese authorities, they can encourage innovation. Remember, this smartphone, they start from Apple, right? If you have some very good invention and people, they will go to buy it. I think in China, we have so many people, so many engineers. If they invent enough things, I think the people, they are willing to spend more money on these interesting stuffs.
Yeah. So more income and more confidence, definitely important to boost consumption. Thank you so much for your insights. Really appreciate your time. Xia Le, Asia Chief Economist at BBVA for us. An increasing number of Hong Kong residents are now traveling to Shenzhen in Guangdong province to enjoy leisure activities, shop and savor culinary delights. This trend raises questions about what is attracting them to Shenzhen and what it signifies. Our reporter Zhu Zhu visits one of the most popular shopping malls in Shenzhen to understand more about this trend.
Recently, the number of Hong Kong residents traveling north to Shenzhen has once again set a new record.
Today, let's go shopping at one of the most popular shopping spots for Hong Kong residents to see what's really going on.
On March 29, more than 880,000 people traveled through the Shenzhen port, setting a new single-day record since clearance operations resumed. When you see tourists dragging suitcases while shopping, probably they are from Hong Kong. Official data shows last year over 250,000 Hong Kong residents visited Shenzhen each day.
It means that on average, each Hong Kong resident went to Shenzhen 7.2 times per year.
What attracted them to come here? I'm doing my haircut here. The hair I'm getting done here costs around 100 yuan, while in Hong Kong, it would be over 200 yuan.
Beauty services like this are much cheaper in Shenzhen compared to Hong Kong, basically around one-third of the price. That's because in Hong Kong, in addition to the service charge tips, the rent is also relatively high.
Apart from cheaper prices, especially in services sectors, what else attracts Hong Kong residents?
I see many people are lining up there.
First, because it tastes smoothly. Some people say its texture is silky, a silk stocking. Another reason for the name is because when we pull the tea bag with the color of the tea looks like someone is holding a piece of pantyhose from a distance, separating the tea.
For me, this is a form of intangible cultural heritage, because some tea restaurants in Hong Kong that used to make it have already closed, so I came here to taste it.
Traditional taste. We seek the taste of tradition and can already smell this familiar flavor downstairs.
But this traditional style pot tea is relatively rare in Hong Kong now.
There was an elderly lady, and after she drank a cup of milk tea, she started chatting with me. As we continued talking, she became a bit emotional and teary-eyed. She said she could taste the flavor of her childhood, because traditional pulled tea like this is becoming rare in Hong Kong. The labor cost there is relatively high, so many places have switched to automated tea making.
For these customers, price is not their primary consideration. Instead, they are drawn to Shenzhen due to its similar culture and cuisine with Hong Kong, as well as its wider range of shopping options.
Actually, the prices to me are more or less the same, but coming here offers more styles to consume, more choices.
I'm a student from Hong Kong. Since it's the weekend, I wanted to add some dishes. I wanted to eat snacks from Guangdong, Guangzhou, so I came over. I also see some people carrying backpacks, dressed in business casual, wandering around the mall. Besides shopping, what else are they looking for?
Our company came here to conduct some business reports, hoping to have more opportunities for development. The government has also provided many preferential conditions for us, including transportation and economic policies. We'll see how we can seize the opportunity to board the ship of the development of the Guangdong, Hong Kong, Macau Greater Bay Area. I check out some brands, especially experiential businesses, whether it's Hong Kong brands coming to Shenzhen or Shenzhen brands going to Hong Kong. I feel there are many areas where they can learn from each other. Shenzhen also has many brands wanting to expand into Hong Kong, and vice versa. I believe we hope to enhance communication between Shenzhen and Hong Kong, creating more opportunities for cooperation.
Many of the business owners here said they are doing the similar things, going to Hong Kong to seek for expansion opportunities.
We definitely need to expand our stores to Hong Kong, because originally, Hong Kong-style milk tea is from Hong Kong. So, we must also open our stores in Hong Kong and make the authentic products even more traditional.
This year marks the fifth anniversary of the establishment of the Guangdong-Hong Kong-Macau Greater Bay Area. The surge in visitors is not just a casual trend. From cultural immersion to economic endeavors, the Greater Bay Area's integration is reaching new heights. Zhu Zhu, CGTN, Shenzhen in Guangdong Province.
Leading financial institutions and banks have revised their 2024 growth forecast for China upward due to improved data and effective policy delivery. Goldman Sachs and Citi now project a 5% growth, while Morgan Stanley raised its forecast to 4.8%, in line with China's official target. These adjustments were driven by China's strong purchasing managers index, stabilized property sector, and better than expected exports and manufacturing activity. Still to come. Bilateral milestone, China and Germany commemorate 40 years of financial partnership with the Dialogue Forum held in Beijing, highlighting strong bilateral economic ties and collaborative efforts.
The world economy as we know it is about to change. Global business reports highlight emerging markets, developing countries, and dynamic sectors worldwide. We feature top analysts and newsmakers to provide perspectives on every facet of business. From an on-the-ground perspective, we provide you with balanced and objective assessments. Fast, sharp, and insightful. Global Business. Only on CGTN.
A financial dialogue and cooperation forum is currently being held in Beijing to mark the 40-year anniversary of relations between China and Germany. The China-Germany Dialogue Forum is co-organized by the Chinese Ministry of Finance and the German Federal Ministry for Economic Cooperation and Development. The forum brings together roughly 140 Chinese and German policymakers, along with experts from academia, finance, and business. Climate change and biodiversity protection are high on the agenda. Economic ties between China and Germany have strengthened in recent years, with bilateral trade reaching 54 billion euros in 2023. According to Statistics Authority Destatis, this is the eighth consecutive year that China has been Germany's most important trading partner. Executives from top German firms like Siemens, Mercedes-Benz, and Bayer have expressed confidence in China's economic growth potential and the government's focus on new quality productive forces at the China Development Forum in March. Chairman of the German Chamber of Commerce in China earlier said that despite competitive measures under a level playing field in the future, most German companies are still committed to the Chinese market and are optimistic about China's growth. The German Chamber of Commerce in China, in its business confidence survey for 2023 and 2024, states that German companies operating in China face a range of challenges, but are optimistic about growth. The survey comes on the eve of German Chancellor Olaf Scholz's scheduled visit to China in mid-April. CGTN's Bian has more.
The Business Confidence Survey 2023 to 2024 was unveiled at a press briefing by the German Chamber of Commerce in China on Wednesday. It showed that 79% of the surveyed companies are planning to continue to invest in China and remain competitive.
Our studies show that our companies are still confident in the Chinese market as the fundamentals are right and the majority expecting an improvement of the economic situation of the country within the next 2 to 3 years. We also see that over half of the companies are investing into China. This is a strong commitment that they are confident about the long-term outlook for the Chinese economy.
Chinese local companies, as innovation leaders in their respective industries, are major competitors for German firms, as per the survey. And critical measures to increase competitiveness, including cooperation with local partners and customers, and more investments in R&D, digitalization will be adopted by the surveyed companies.
Chancellor Scholz is coming now as chancellor the second time. The first time he was during the pandemic in China for a very, very short meeting. This time he's planning to come for 3 days.
Ahead of the German Chancellor's trip to China, executives of the German Chamber of Commerce in China explained the necessity for German companies to stay and grow in China. They said as the Chinese economy is entering a mature stage, German firms need to be part of it.
According to Mr. Boutique, issues including market access, data security, regulations on shared R&D, green economy, as well as future formats of cooperation between the two sides in various sectors will be discussed during Chancellor Xu's visit. Bian, CGTN. Beijing.
Now for more discussions on China-Germany ties, we're joined by Wuri Buchner, Jean Monnet Professor for European Studies at Stanford University in Berlin. Professor, good to see you. So what do you think, what signals do you think are being conveyed as top financial leaders from China and Germany meet in person once again?
This is a very strong signal that Germany is very committed to keep going in its close relations with China, which for some European observers comes as a surprise because other countries focus more on what is considered to be de-risking. But the large German companies that have been mentioned already, the big car manufacturers, Volkswagen, Mercedes, they are so heavily invested that they see a de-risking strategy in investing more in China. So there are multiple opportunities, but at the same time, the geopolitical analysis of the relationship rather warns that if we put too much eggs in the same basket, it can come with a dependency that needs to be addressed as we became too dependent on energy imports from Russia, and a dependency on security from the United States is part of the discussion. So therefore, it has to be balanced what's good in terms of opportunities economically and what's dangerous in terms of security.
Yeah. And why do you think it's crucial for both sides to deepen their cooperation in the fields of finance and economics?
Well, we are no longer in a time in which we simply produce things, like the industrial base in Germany is 25%, while China is by far the largest producer of goods, and the future is in services. So opening the Chinese markets for financial institutions like Deutsche Bank that issued recently panda bonds is another step in enhancing the collaboration in a field with much more growth potential than the industrial sector.
Now, what are the future prospects for strengthening fiscal and financial collaboration between China and Germany?
Well, the fact that Germany just ended a 16-year phase of economic boom, which was unheard of in the 20th century, has a lot to do with the close relationship between Germany and China. But given a changing geopolitical environment, it remains to be seen if it is possible to keep going in this direction. On the one hand, it has great economic and financial opportunities. On the other hand, China's role in the aggression of Russia against Ukraine plays a major role in public perception of whether China is considered to be a partner or a competitor or a rival.
All right, thank you so much for your insights. Really appreciate your time. Wuri Buchner, Jean Monnet Professor for European Studies at Stanford University in Berlin for us. Another country has been added to China's growing list of visa-exempt nations. China and Georgia have signed an agreement on mutual visa exemption. The deal signed on Wednesday enables citizens from the two countries to enter each other's borders visa-free for a maximum visit of 30 days. The agreement will take effect once bilateral legal requirements are finalized. China's ambassador to Georgia, Zhou Qian, said the visa-free agreement will boost exchanges in trade and tourism.
Here on BizTalk, we connect the dots, shedding light on the real stories behind the economic landscape. To better understand China's dynamism and the economies and rhythms of business, propelling new drivers of growth.
China.
BizTalk, your window into China and the global economy. Only on BizTalk.
The Consumer Price Index report for March showed overall inflation in the U.S. ticked up. It is the third consecutive increase in inflation and reflects some stalling when it comes to cutting price pressures. Karina Mitchell is in New York with why curbing inflation is proving so problematic and the prospect for interest rate cuts.
Well, the door has all but slammed shut on any potential for a rate cut in June. Bond markets now pricing in that we will see two rate cuts this year. At the start of the year, markets were expecting that we would see up to six or seven cuts this year. The problem was this CPI report for March, which came in much hotter than anticipated. We expected a rise of 0.3%. Instead, we saw a rise of 0.4% month over month. The headline number then went to 3.5% year over year. And core CPI also hotter for the month and coming in at 3.8%. This is much hotter than the Federal Reserve wanted to see, or for that matter, Joe Biden or the White House. And the bigger problem here is that the gains were actually quite broad-based across several categories that went up just by a little bit in each of those categories. So, for example, food was up by 0.1%. Gas prices were up. Energy prices are up. But the two big culprits here, more than 80% of the year-over-year gains in inflation are attributable to two things. Auto insurance prices are rising and shelter costs keep rising. They were up by 0.5% in March after rising by 0.4% the month earlier. The Fed keeps saying that shelter costs will eventually go down. That will help drive down inflation, but we haven't seen it yet. And the thing that is holding the consumer together right now is that we have an exceptionally strong labor market at this point in time in the U.S. Wages are still quite decent, and we're seeing a better balance between supply and demand. But, you know, how long does that last with an American consumer whose pandemic savings have all been spent and debt is starting to rise? So the question is, what does the Fed do after seeing this report? It was a critical report. It was a wake-up call for this U.S. central bank because it shows that inflation has been rising for 3 months. That just is not an anomaly. It is a trend. January could have been the outlier, but we saw in February all three measures of inflation went up. And then we see this hotter than anticipated report that is giving power to the statements of some of the Fed members. Bostic and Waller, for example, were pushing for fewer cuts and waiting later. The Federal Reserve in March produced their dot plot, which showed that we would get three rate cuts this year. They may now have to revise that lower. Some people are saying that we won't see any rate cuts at all. And former U.S. Treasury Secretary Larry Sumner says that the Fed's next move could well be a rate hike instead of a rate cut. Wall Street didn't like any of that news. Karina Mitchell, CGTN, New York.
And that will do it for this edition of Global Business. I'm Javan Nabrik in Beijing. Stay with us.